Welcome to 2 and 2 Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark the Vanier, delivering an hour of comedy. Later on, it's the Henry Morgan Show from 1947, but right now, a 1947 broadcast of the Jack Parr program. This episode, taken from the first month the program was on NBC, as a summer replacement for Jack Benny, from June 22nd of that year.
This week, number 8 on your hit parade. Sorry, wrong program.
From Hollywood, Lucky Strike presents the Jack Parr program with songs by Trudy Irwin, the Paige Cavanaugh Trio, Jerry Fielding in the orchestra, yours truly, Hi Averback, and starring America's new young humorist, Jack Parr!
Thank you, you're very kind. This is Jack Parr. Hello, and to that lady on a picnic listening to me on her portable radio. Madam, your child is smearing jam all over my volume control. Before we go any further, here's the weather forecast for Washington, D.C. Cloudy, followed by continuing vetoes. I understand that Congress has a new theme song this week. It's called I'm Just Mild About Harry. Well, here we are on our fourth week replacing Jack Benny. I'll bet that President Truman would love to get a summer replacement for Senator Taft. Radio's really getting ready for the hot weather. Take Gabriel Heater. They've turned Heater down to his pilot light. This summer, we're going to hear a great many mystery shows on the air. All the private eyes are wearing sunglasses, you know. Mystery shows are great for hot weather, though. You get frightened, your hair stands on end, and you can ventilate your head. Well, I feel like I'd sneak in every script, you know. They all can't be gems. We're still friends, aren't we? I hear that on Inner Sanctum, they've taken down... I hear that on Inner Sanctum, they've taken down the creaking door and put up a screen. That's to keep the bats and spiders in. Personally, I like those mystery shows. There, ever since I was a kid, I've been crazy about blood and detectives and murder. Maybe I was born with a silver knife in my back. I don't know. And did you see where Lassie the dog has her own radio program? Confidentially, she's not the same sweet pup she used to be. I met her at the studio this morning, and she wouldn't even wag at me. Maybe success has gone to her tail. I don't know. How do you like it, a dog putting on the dog? But that's summer radio. It's a matter of economy, you see. In the winter, they say, Mr. Benny, how do you want your salary this week? Cashier's check or stocks and bonds? To me, they say, hey, kid, how do you want it, heads or tails? Some sponsors have cut their programs way down for the summer. You take Phil Spitalny's Hour of Charm. In the winter, it's a 65-piece orchestra. Now it consists of a guitar, Evelyn and her magic mixmaster, and a leaky balloon. We've had to make some changes in our plans for music, too. We were going to do the sextet from Lucia, but they cut it down to the Paige Cavanaugh Trio, who will now do their version of Cecilia. Any resemblance to the original sextet is pure talent. Proceed, fellas.
Does your mother know you're out, Cecilia? Does she know that I'm about to steal you? Oh, my, when I look in your eyes, my heart tells me you and I should get together. How's about a little kiss, Cecilia? Just a kiss you never miss, Cecilia. Why do we two keep on wasting time? Cecilia, please be mine. Does your mother know you're out, Cecilia? Does she know that I'm about to steal it? Oh my, when I look in your eyes, my heart tells me you and I should get together. How's about a little kiss, Cecilia? Just kiss, you never miss, Cecilia. Why do we two keep on wasting time? Cecilia, baby, please be mine.
Thank you very much. Hey, have you ever looked at those movie magazines? There is some fascinating reading, believe me. I read one the other day. There were such educational articles as how an average Hollywood family gets along on as little as $4,000 a week. And how to make this year's husband last another year. Another big feature of the movie magazine was the interviews with the stars. For instance, in one interview, Margaret O'Brien's mother said that she wanted her daughter to grow up like any other normal American child, and therefore she was limiting Margaret to 28 ice cream cones a day. In another interview, Errol Flynn said that his hobby was acting, but that he doesn't have time for it. Now, what about those interviews? What is the movie star really thinking when he's being interviewed? And what's the reporter thinking? Do they actually mean the things they say to each other? Shall we find out?
We take you now to the home of that dashing leading man, Gregory Parr, as he welcomes Constance Vanderskin, reporter from Screen Gush magazine.
Hello, Gregory, darling. Oh, it was so grand of you to give me a few moments of your time. I've been waiting just ages for this interview.
Ages? It was either interview him or trigger the horse. Just my luck, Trigger's out of town.
Isn't that nice, Connie, dear? And I must say, you look just grand. Yes, indeed, you seem to get younger every time I see you.
Younger, this is the only dame I know whose crow's feet wear open-toed shoes.
Oh, you're so kind, Greg, darling. But now I think we should start our interview.
All right, Connie, dear. What would you like to know about little old me?
I hope she doesn't ask me about my last picture. What a clinker. The two Mrs. Nussbaums.
Greg, what you do in your spare time would certainly be interesting to my readers.
It would be more interesting if my readers could read.
Well, I've always been mad about active sports, polo, boxing, wrestling, anything that's rough and dangerous.
I hope she doesn't notice I forgot to put my knitting needles away.
Well, I can believe you're the athletic type. I saw you in bathing trunks once. Ooh, what a physique. You're so masculine, so vibrant, so alive.
I bet when he gets on the scales, instead of a fortune, the car just has the phone number of Forest Lawn on it.
Yes, I have developed quite a physique. My neck measures 17 and a half inches, you know.
17 and a half inches?
That's right.
I wonder if she knows that includes my shoulders.
Of course, you understand, Connie, that sports are not my only hobby.
Really?
Yes, I'm quite a bookworm. Read all the classics. Shakespeare, Longfellow, Shaw.
I'm all set if she asks me about Dick Tracy.
Anything else, Connie?
Yes. Tell me, Greg, how did you happen to meet your charming wife, Gwendolyn?
Charming wife. She's probably loaded as usual. And upstairs looking for a bottle in the chandelier.
Well, we met long before I became a star, and we've come up together the hard way.
I hope Gwendolyn doesn't get electrocuted fooling around with that chandelier.
I see. Well, just one more question and then I'm through. What are your plans for the future, Greg, darling?
Well, very soon I hope to put my dear old mother in a home, you know, my home. I'm really crazy about her. She's 70, you know.
I have to do something for the old lady. Last week she lost her job setting up pins in a bowling alley.
My, how sweet. Well, Greg, it's been a grand interview. And when it's published, I'm sure all your fans will send you loads of mail.
If he's smart, he won't open anything that ticks.
Thank you, Connie. It's been a pleasure, but next time you drop in, please let me know in advance so I can be ready.
This will teach me not to go so long between permanents.
Well, goodbye, Greg, dear.
Goodbye, Connie, darling. Now, here's our lovely singer, Miss Trudy Irwin. Trudy has a brand new idea in vocals. You can understand every word she sings, and she stays on key for the entire 2 minutes. Patent applied for. Trudy?
Heavy. Why the sudden change? Why so cold and why so strange? Be sentimental. Don't hang your faith on jealousy and hate. 'Cause Ivy, he was never born for the touch of a witch's thorn. So please be gentle to his heart. Why do you take his arms tonight? They wander far from sight. Can't understand you, Ivy. But remember this, if you really want his kiss, be sweet and gentle, lest you remember this, if you really want his kiss, be sweet and gentle, lest you part. Be gentle to his heart. Friends,
did you know that a recent radio survey showed that one out of every three people in the United States is now a disc jockey? Everybody's becoming a disc jockey. Woody Herman, Tommy Dorsey, and even Paul Whiteman. A funny thing, though, for years people thought Whiteman was playing records. Then one night he stepped aside and there was a 56-piece orchestra behind him. As a result of this disc jockey epidemic, our country's turning into a nation of record fans. How will this affect the next generation? Will the kids of the future be born with holes in their heads? Will their mothers transcribe them for release at a more convenient bedtime? And will large families come in albums? The disc jockey is a product of today, which is one of the few things our ancestors can be thankful for. See, how about that? If there had been radio in the days of our ancestors, would they have had disc jockeys? Can you imagine them running wild a century ago among composers like Bach or Beethoven or Schubert? Way back there when Daniel Boone was trapping for I.J. Fox. Here's how it would sound if there had been radio 100 years ago.
And so we conclude another chapter in the true life story of René Latouche, girl candle snuffer. The story of one girl's struggle with Louis XIV. We urge you, one and all, monsieur, madame, and peasants, to tune in again tomorrow at the same time. This is NBC, the Napoleon Broadcasting Company.
The time is now half past the hour of 8. Gruen Curvex sundial time. Remember the Curvex, the only sundial that's curved to fit your lawn. And now, loyal subjects of the king, here is your favorite disc jockey. The show that has the Epcats jumping from Marseille to Mobile. Jacques Pars Platter Paris.
Hail and forsooth, gang. This is your favorite knave, Jock Pye, with another solid record show. Yay and verily, cats, we're really going to have a time tonight. All new releases, we're going to have, we're going to back into Bach, chop some Chopin, and poo-poo some Paganini. And later on as our guest tonight, we're going to have Franz Schubert, whom we all know as Frankie Boy. By the way, serfs, the first quarter hour is brought to you by Honest Pierre, the used horse dealer. Friends, are you still riding around on last year's horse? Wouldn't you like to get a new 1848 horse without paying a penny under the tail? Well, Honest Pierre has just received a shipment of brand new horses with such outstanding features as white sidewall horseshoes and rear vision saddle. Remember, I'll wait for you out there. Remember, horse drivers, Honest Pierre's nags contain knee action. If they won't go, kick them with your knees. All prices are FOB Arabia. And now, cats, our first record. It's a new little ditty by Wolfgang Mozart, and Wolfie tells me it really jumps. Yea, verily, it's groovy. It is recorded by Sir Guy Lombardo, the sweetest music this side of Hanover. All right, Sir Guy. Thank you, Sir Guy Lombardo. By the way, kids, that was Popsy Schneerbaum on the first flugelhorn. Incidentally, that number was played for Igor, Boris, Ivan, and all the gang over at the Siberian salt mines. And the next quarter hour is brought to you by the Acme Powdered Wig Company. So now comes a bit of a transcription.
Good news from the Acme Powdered Wig Company, makers of fine wigs for over 2,000 heads. Yes, Acme wigs now come in three convenient sizes. Long, very long, and... Hey, who turned out the lights? So, buy an Acme wig today, and soon all your friends will be saying...
She's lovely. She's engaged. She's bald.
Yes, good old Acme powdered wigs. No fooling, varlets. Acme wigs are so realistic, even dandruff can't tell the difference. And And now back to the record rack, and we have for you a brand new pop tune, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. This, of course, was written by that popular young composer, Ludwig von Beethoven. Nice going, Lud. We're going to hear this new symphony recorded by that young musical nobleman, Count Spike de la Jones. Spike has arranged this symphony for two oboes and a water hydrant. All right, here we go. Beethoven's Fifth, recorded by Count Spike de la Jones and his orchestra, and I'll be back with you in just a minuet. Gadzooks, that was really solid, Gates. Before I forget, that last tune was dedicated to Napoleon and Josephine, who are celebrating their third year in exile today. Good luck, kids. And now, cats, gather around. It's time for our special guest. Here he is, that solid sending scribbler of songs, Franz Unfinished Symphony Schubert. Come in, Franz. It's nice having you with us.
Thank you. It gives me real kicks to be here with you.
And it's good digging you again, Franz. What have you been doing with yourself?
Oh, the same thing I've been doing for years. Trying to finish that darn thing.
Well, Franz, tell us, what's new in the symphony racket these days?
Well, now, let me see. Oh, yeah, that young kid, what's his name again? Oh, yeah, Chopin, Freddy Chopin. Well, he just wrote a thing called Polonaise. It's nothing, strictly schmaltz. He's a nice kid, that Chopin, but no talent.
Too much maybe mayonnaise in the Polonaise, perhaps. Franz, you just can't brush Chopin off like that. His stuff's creating quite a stir around the music halls. What about that latest number of his, the Funeral March?
It's the Funeral March. Believe me, nobody will ever dance to it.
Franz, I'm surprised to hear you talk this way about a young composer. Isn't it true that you wrote a symphony at the age of three?
Yeah.
Just think, a complete symphony at the age of three. It's amazing.
What's amazing? It was lousy.
But it's still so unbelievable, a three-year-old child writing an entire symphony.
Well, there was nothing else to do. I was too young to go with girls.
I'll bet you wrote that symphony on three-cornered sheet music, maybe, huh? Tell me, Franz, is it true that a lot of your work has been influenced by Ludwig von Beethoven?
Pa, are you joking? Ludwig von Beethoven? That schmo influenced me?
Take it easy, Frankie.
Well, I can't help it. All the time I'm hearing this with this influence. And what is this Beethoven bomb right, anyway? Symphonies, nothing but symphonies. Like that fifth symphony of his. Da-da-da-da. That's music, da-da-da-da. That's knocking on the door, Richard. I'm so mad at this man, I could kill him. I could scream.
Believe me, he did not influence me.
Franz, I think you've got bats in your Beethoven, I do. Look, there's something else I want to ask you. Is there any truth to the swing alley talk that you're forming a new hot trio?
Oh, yeah. We are going to call ourselves Franz Schubert und his Wiener Schnitzel 3.
Wiener Schnitzel 3. The boys jump?
Jump? Ach, believe me, strictly wunderbar Velorini. We got Johannes Brahms on the cello. Good boy, that Johnny. And, on the harpsichord, we got Franz Liszt, also with man, and once he played with Beethoven.
Beethoven, he did not influence me. He did not influence me.
And on the violin is me, also a good man.
I'm sure of that, Franz, and I'm going to put a plug in here for you right now. By the way, cats, The Wiener Schnitzel 3 is available for picnics, weddings, and guillotine parties. How's that, Franz?
Oh, absolutely zooty. But I think you might also mention the trio opens Saturday night at the sign of the Old Boar's Head Inn.
Oh, yes, that place right next door to the sign of Ye No Vacancy. Did you get all that, cats? Let's really turn out Saturday and give Franz and the boys a great...
Excuse me, Jacques. Madame, monsieur, and peasants, we must interrupt this broadcast for urgent news. The palace guards have just overthrown the king. The annual spring revolution is now officially underway.
Sorry, platter fans. Due to circumstances beyond our control, this program will now come to you from a more convenient country.
Don't forget, friends, for the Thompson Radio Entertainment, set your dial to NBC Wednesday night for that thrilling newspaper drama, The Big Story. And on Saturday night, don't miss your hit parade with Andy Russell, Martha Tilton, and the Pied Piper.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Jack Parr Program, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 22, 1947 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday with your host, Mark Levonier. And now our next host will be comedian Henry Morgan. Heard on ABC, part of their Wednesday night lineup at 10:30, over 8 million people tuned in to what would be the Eversharp sponsor's last program supporting Morgan due to his poking fun at said sponsor for a bit too long for their comfort. NBC would end up sponsoring Henry Morgan's show when he moved to that network in 1949. This episode was broadcast right before Christmas on December 24th, 1947.
The Henry Morgan Show? Eversharp, manufacturers of Eversharp Chick Inject Erasers and Blades, and Eversharp Precision Writing Instruments, brings you The Henry Morgan Show, featuring Arnold Stang, Bernie Green and his orchestra, and the Don Cossack Chorus. And tonight, yes, tonight, the major winners of the sensational Eversharp Chick Inject Eraser Contest will be announced. Say, maybe you're the winner of that $15,000 house. Stick around and find out.
Fool the orchestra, anyway. Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan. Relax. Thank you. Last Christmas on this program, we presented a little Christmas story for children. That was a year ago, so now it's a tradition. This story was definitely for children, but we heard later that a number of grown-ups sneaked out of bed and listened. You know how parents are, kids, just when you think they're asleep. They come out of the bedroom with all kinds of excuses. They want a drink of water, or there's a tiger in the room, a blanket fell on the floor, or something. So this year, just because it's Christmas Eve, we might as well let them stay up and listen. But parents, no snickering. Now, our story begins the day after Christmas, which you have to admit is an unusual day to begin a Christmas story. As a matter of fact, we have an unusual way to begin the program. On our first show for Eversharp, we had a bagpipe player. And since then, we've had hurdy-gurdies, nickel-in-a-slot pianos, yodelers, people who sang in Greek, male quartets, female octets, men who bark like dogs, dogs who bark like men. And I wondered how I could bring this thing to a stop. Tonight, I'm happy to announce I found a way to top myself, as it were. We present the biggest act our budget has ever seen. The original Don Cossack Chorus, conducted by Sergei Yarov. They are a little over 24 men in the chorus, and they're real nitsy. They're going to sing two songs, the first of which is an old Russian chant, Lord Have Mercy Upon Us. Господи, помилуй, 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 Господи, помилуй. The original Don Cossack chorus now does a Russian soldier song. I don't know whether it's the old Russian army or the new Russian army or if they just made it up. All I can tell you is that it's a beaut. And now for our story. It's about two boys and a girl, little ones named Norman, Joey, and Jeannie. How old are they? Oh, about your age. And how old are you? I don't know. As the story begins, it's the day after Christmas. Norman is coming up the front walk to Joey's house, and he says,
Hi, Joey. Hi, Norman. What presents have you got broken?
I forgot to tell you that Joey is sitting there looking at the ruins of an electric train, which it took a dozen graduate engineers to put together.
What you doing, Joey?
I'm trying to figure out how to put this train together again.
Who took it apart?
My father. What did you get for Christmas?
Oh, a sled and some skates and a rector set.
Yeah? Well, what else?
Oh, the rest of it was just useful stuff.
Yeah, I got stuck with some of that, too.
Hello, Norman.
Hello, Jeannie.
Hello, Joey.
Joey, why don't you say hello to Jeannie?
She's my sister.
Joey, Mama said you should come in and wash up for supper.
Oh, don't bother me. What a pest a sister is. I asked for a brother and I got you.
You better mind or Santa Claus won't bring you anything for Christmas.
Ah, we just had Christmas, Smarty.
Smarty yourself, I mean next year.
Oh, you don't have to be good all year for one Christmas. I figured 2 weeks before Christmas is plenty.
You do so, too, have to be good all year.
Good all year for just one Christmas?
Gee, that doesn't sound fair.
Yeah, if you got to be good every day on kind of Christmas, then it ought to be Christmas every day. What do you think, Joey?
It ought to be, but it ain't. That's on account of they got the wrong people in charge of it.
Who, Joey?
Grown-ups.
Well, I can't blame Joey for wanting Christmas every day if he has to be good every day. And that's the way it looks to him as he sits down to supper with Jeannie, his father and mother, on the day after Christmas.
Joey, you aren't eating a thing. Pass your plate.
Oh, Mom, I don't like turkey hash.
Nonsense, son. It's delicious. No, thank you, Mother. I don't believe I'll have any.
Daddy, is it true that you have to be good all year for Santa Claus to come?
That's right, son.
Gee, a fella's got to spend all his time being good. It doesn't leave him time for anything else. Isn't that right, Daddy?
Huh? Oh, of course, Joey.
Father!
Oh, no, Joey, of course not. Whatever your mother says. Mother, would you hand me that newspaper, please?
Here you are, dear. I haven't seen it yet. What are the headlines?
Here's an interesting item. You remember that woman in Boston who left $50,000 to her cat last year?
Yes.
The cat just died and left it to another cat.
Well, that's sensible.
Here's an interesting item.
Read it, dear.
Now, the toothpick manufacturer's lobby arrived in Washington today. They will ask Senator Mushhead to introduce a bill doubling the price of toothpicks. They claim that both ends are being used. They've also introduced a new 8-inch toothpick. They call it the toothpick with a new look. The lobby also plans
Daddy, what's a lobby?
Well, a lobby is a group of people who go to Washington to put pressure on congressmen so they'll pass a law.
Can they get any kind of a law passed?
Well, sometimes it seems that way.
Even if the president doesn't want it?
Especially.
Dad.
Yes?
How far is it to Washington?
The plot is not getting any thinner. Joey is getting an idea, and the first thing to do is to tell Norman.
Hey, Norman, we gotta start a lobby.
Okay. What's a lobby?
Well, a lobby is when you go to Washington and tell a senator to pass a law.
Who does?
Anybody. Us, we could do it. We got rights just like people.
No kidding.
Sure. We just go to Washington and tell them to pass laws. No school, no washing for supper, no spankings, no running errands.
Well, they wouldn't pass all those laws.
Yeah.
But I know how you can get everything with just one law.
Yeah?
On Christmas, you don't go to school, you don't run errands, and you don't get spanked. Isn't that so?
Yeah.
So, you just get the senator to pass a law making every day Christmas.
Jiminy!
Santa Claus would come every day, too.
You suppose he would?
He'd have to if it was a law.
Jiminy!
So, the three children decide to go to Washington as the head of a children's lobby. They want to get a law passed making Christmas every day. And I predict they're going to get a lot of support, especially from Macy's and Gimbel's. They carry with them a petition signed by such leading American figures as Margaret O'Brien and Joel Kupperman. Joel was planning to go along, but he couldn't because of his regular radio commitment. Fortunate kid. And so... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to break up the story. On to Washington, where we find Norman, Joey, and Jeannie.
Hey, let's ask the moon where we can find some senators.
Well, there's a man. Let's ask him. Hello, mister.
Hiya.
We just came to Washington. We have to go someplace in an awful hurry.
So who's stopping you?
We don't know exactly where to go.
What's the matter? You lost?
No, we came to Washington to get something done.
You're lost.
No, we ain't lost. We got important business. We're going to see a real senator.
Big deal. But, look, if you're looking for senators, why don't you try those buildings over there?
Thanks, mister. I hope we'll see you again sometime.
Yeah, likewise.
I still don't know what Gerard was doing in Washington. But the children were there on business, vital business for the children of the world, and finally they came to an important government building.
Hey, Norm. Maybe this is the place.
Yeah. It says Senate Committee. Let's go in.
Yes, what is it? I'm a busy man.
Well, sir, we're from PS 58.
What congressional district?
Huh?
I said, what congressional district? Third, fourth, fifth?
Oh, we're from the third grade. Miss Horton's our teacher.
Horton? I don't know any Miss Horton.
Gee, didn't you ever go to school?
Of course I went to school, but that was 40 years ago.
Oh, Miss Horton must have been there then.
Now, listen, children. You just can't come walking in here. After all, this is the government.
Yeah, I know. Government of the people, by the people, for the people.
Hey, that's pretty good. Do you know who said that?
Yes, sir. Miss Horton.
Anyway, children, what can I do for you? I'm a busy man.
Mr. Senator, we came here about Christmas.
Yes.
We don't think one Christmas a year is enough. We'd like to have Christmas every day.
Christmas every day? Why, that's completely modus operandi. It's unconstitutionally mandamus. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah.
What?
You don't like it. But, Mr. Senator, we want Christmas every day.
But I tell you, children, it's utterly and completely and absolutely. The question before us at this moment certainly is before us at this moment.
The senator spoke for 1 hour, which was that senator's way of saying no. But the children weren't discouraged, and they began to pick up a lot of support. One newspaper headline said,
"Kids claim cloakroom quorum."
One paper quoted a minority opposition to the Christmas Everyday group with the headline,
"Anti-kids block. Blocks, kids blocks."
And a cabinet member was very discouraging.
But, Mr. Secretary, we want it awful bad.
Ridiculous, absurd, flagrantly unconstitutional. Undoubtedly a priori any pluribus. Now, what do you say to that? Now, you stop that. Right now. Please, you can't. You're just trying to... No? All right.
And so the children's lobby made progress, and on the air, one commentator reported it something like this. Good morning. Tonight, the news from Washington concerns the United Nations delegate from Russia, who is, I understand, Russian. Meanwhile, the children's lobby is making considerable progress in Washington, and it looks very much as if the president will... Good night. And finally, late on the next day...
Hey, Norman, let's try this place. We haven't been here.
Okay, Joey. Let's go up the steps.
Oh. Welcome to the White House, children. Is there something I can do for you?
Well, we'd like to have a law passed.
I know just how you feel.
This would be a very popular law.
Well, I feel this way about it. You can please some of the people some of the time, and some of the people all of the time, but you can't please some of the people any of the time.
If you pass this law, you'll please all of the kids all of the time.
All right. I'll do it.
Ah, there's good news tonight. There's a little light burning in the White House tonight. And there's something about the sight of a white light burning bright in a house that's white that makes a man want to shout out so all the world can hear. Ah, there's good news tonight. Our little children are rejoicing tonight. All over the world. Tonight. And I've just been handed a flash, and it says, good night. And so, well, everybody's done it now. That's how many for me, two or three? About three. And so the law was passed, making every day of the year Christmas. And there were great changes throughout the land. The George Washington Bridge was torn down to make erector sets. The Ford assembly lines converted overnight to making four-door tinker toys. And on the stock market, the flexible flyer went up and down. You needn't have really. That was quite... Every poor little girl had a mama doll, and every rich little girl had a mater doll. Uncle... That was a good one, though. Uncle Don was on the air 26 hours a day. But did it make boys and girls happy? We'll find out right after Bernie Green's special Christmas medley.
Little Jack Horner sat in a corner eating a Christmas pie. He put in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, "What a good boy am I."
Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water.
down and broke his crown. And Jill came tumbling after.
A year later, yes, 1 year later, and the children have had Christmas every day for a year. Once again, it's December 24th, and the same two little boys are talking.
Hello, Norman.
Hello, Joey.
What have you got there?
A sled.
How many sleds you got?
364.
Me too. How many footballs you got?
364. How many roller skates you got?
728.
Hello, fellas.
Hello, Jean. What do you got there?
Oh, another old mama doll.
What's its name?
Ditto.
Hey, here comes Santa Claus again.
Well, hello, children. Merry Christmas.
What's so funny?
Well, here it is, Christmas again. And I have the peachiest presents for all you children. Norman, would you like to see what I brought you?
Nah.
I got the best sled in the whole world for you.
You said that yesterday.
But this one's got fog lights and ashtrays and a radio and chromium bumpers.
I got that kind.
I know. But this one is a convertible.
I don't think I want it, but thanks anyway.
Oh, now, don't make me take it back to the North Pole again. You know what we agreed, fellas? No returns.
Okay. Put it on that pile over there.
Well, fine. Goodbye. Merry Christmas.
Santa.
Yes?
How about not coming tomorrow?
Not come tomorrow?
Yes. Why don't you skip tomorrow and make it a holiday?
I'd love to, children. My feet are killing me. But you know, it's Christmas every day. It was your idea. See you tomorrow. It's Christmas, you know. Oh, those bells give me a headache. Think I'll put in a buzzer. Bye.
You know, kids?
What?
Maybe if we talk to the president again.
Yeah. Maybe we ought to. You know what?
What?
I think it's definitely a priori and absolutely e pluribus.
So, they talked to the men in Washington again, and the law was repealed and changed Christmas back to once a year. And all the kids were happy again. And the story has a moral. Don't laugh, because people at home don't know what you're laughing at, and they think I'm doing something wrong. You know, and it breaks up the continuity of what I'm saying. And you know, I might get canceled or something. The moral of the story, remember we just did that story, is first, you can get too much of a good thing, and second, It's not necessary to have Christmas every day to act like it's Christmas every day. And there's another thing that I did mean to tell you. Merry Christmas. How much you want to stretch, Charlie? 15? Da da dee dum, ya da dum, ya da da dee da dum, ya da dee dum, ya da dum, ya da dee dum. And they told me I didn't know how to ad lib. Isn't that ridiculous? Morgan will be on this same corner in front of the cigar store again, I hope.
The Henry Morgan Show on Tuned to Yesterday from December 24th, 1947 on ABC. And that wraps up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.